Poddo.
Way back in 1605, Robert Catesby and his merry band of Catholic plotters developed a devious plan to overthrow the monarchy of James I. They sought to blow up the House of Lords during the state opening of Parliament, thus killing the king and allowing them to install his 9-year-old daughter, Elizabeth, in his place. It was a plan of daring grandeur, involving both regicide and a coup, except that domestic terrorism was tricky in the 1600s. On a routine inspection of the House of Lords cellar, 36 enormous barrels of gunpowder were discovered, along with the man guarding them, Guy Fawkes. Catesby went down like an action hero in a shootout at Holbeck House. Fawkes and most of the other plotters were rounded up, hanged, drawn, and quartered. But while Fawkes did not achieve his stated ambition of returning a Catholic head of state to Britain, and did end up in a disappointing number of non-consecutive chunks, he lives on as the guy. Penny for the guy, British children sing out each November. Then they truss up a mannequin styled as some hated figure and burn him on a vast, flaming pyre. This is justice at its symbolic best. This is Bonfire Night. I'm Nick Hilton, and this is Other Edens. Today, the story of Lewes, a town of smoke and flame. Remember, remember, the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason and plot. Or so the old ditty goes. I remember, remember the last 5th of November because, firstly, it wasn't that long ago. And also, secondly, because I spent it travelling to a curious and ancient ritual on Britain's south coast. The Bonfire Night celebrations in Lewes are world famous. From around the country and the world at large, people descend on this small East Sussex town for one night of the year, and then disperse for the remaining 364 days, stopping by occasionally for breakfast at Cope Brasserie before a performance at neighbouring Glyndebourne. Lewes is a geographically curious place, set on the River Ouse. Is there a better named river in the world? As it flows through the South Downs. For centuries, it has been a defensive outpost, repelling invaders from the North Sea or English Channel. It pushed back Vikings in the reign of Alfred the Great, was given away as a prize by William the Conqueror, and saw Henry III defeated there in the 13th century civil war. For a town with a population that couldn't sell out the O2 Arena, it's seen a lot of history. But now, like so many towns who are famous for really only one thing, much of that history has been lost in a haze of smoke. I dialed up Andy Thomas, a Louisian and historian, to get his version of the origins of Lewes's Bonfire Night.
It's a strange thing, actually, trying to pin down why Lewes, of all places, has made now the biggest Bonfire Night celebrations in the world. It's been much debated. Of course, it was initially a warning to Catholics not to try and do anything like blow up the king and the parliament again. Or, let's be clearer about this, anti-papist, because some people don't really understand this, that why some of the effigies involve old popes of 1605 and things like this. Back then, popery was seen as like a foreign invading force. It wasn't like it is today with cuddly Pope Francis in the Vatican. By putting up banners, you know, that remember, remember, rather controversial ones saying no popery, what you're basically saying is that we do not wish to be invaded by a foreign power. So Lewes, it had a series of rather unfortunate events in the mid-1500s where there were a lot of Protestant martyrs burned in the streets. 17 men and women got burned between 1555 and 1557. So although that happened right across the country, Lewes did seem to get it particularly badly. So I think that left a scar in the kind of collective memory. And of course, then people didn't like Catholics very much for a while, as you'd imagine. And gradually you find that it starts to coalesce. And there's an understanding that if Bonfire Night becomes a little bit more organised and family-friendly and a bit less like gangland street violence, that it's going to be tolerated. And that's when you then get the development of the bonfire societies in Lewes. And that spreads out around the southeast. It's very much a southeast England thing, but Lewis is the core.
The town is not really equipped to deal with this influx, which seems to hit new records each year as students swarm up from Brighton and Sussex expats bring their friends down from London. As such, the town has developed a policy of locking itself in and raising the drawbridge as much as it can. Police close the roads in the afternoon of bonfire night, and parking restrictions sweep out from the town centre like the arms of an enormous squid. I am Sussex-born, albeit the other, possibly better, Sussex, West Sussex, and therefore I felt, even knowing the town's displeasure at tourists, that my presence would be tacitly accepted. I had a good friend growing up who lived just outside Uckfield, a few minutes' drive from Lewis, and my sister went to school in Brighton. Even though I could comfortably count my visits to Lewis on a single hand, I'd make a fair stab at an argument that I had some innate entitlement to bear witness to their bonfire night. The drive to Lewis from my home in South London is a couple of hours, and this year's bonfire night fell on a Friday, which added a feverish layer of intensity to proceedings. I had prepared for my trip by speaking to a few people locally, so I was aware that things might not be as simple as parking the car in the centre of town, enjoying the festivities, and then setting off back home in time to watch Gogglebox. But it wasn't until when, with my sat-nav still claiming I was 10 or 15 minutes from my destination, I began to see the parking restrictions that I realised I might have underestimated the sheer extent of the shutdown. I cruised through the centre of town. I was arriving 30 minutes or so before these roads would be closed to all through traffic until the early hours of the morning, and witnessed an atmosphere familiar to anyone who has been to a provincial fair or a street parade. Stalls selling those tiny, over-sugared donuts that aren't sold anywhere outside of carnivals and festivals, which is always a sign that something isn't as delicious as it seems. Like, if mince pies are so tasty, why are they so damn seasonal? Throngs of people were already gathered around any vendor supplying alcohol in its myriad forms. Beer, always a favourite, or mulled wine and cider. But I had to keep driving, and I gradually found myself heading back out of town, up the B2192, in the direction of the neighbouring village of Ringmer. So you find me currently on November the 5th, which is bonfire night, and I'm walking the 2.5 mile journey from my car to the town of Lewis. So I'm speaking into a voice memo, probably sounding like sort of Paula Radcliffe on the final straights. And I'm thinking of the Olympics for some reason in my head, because that's basically the only time in my life I've seen such extensive parking restrictions. I just kept driving through the town, out, further and further parking restrictions. And eventually I parked in the little village of Ringmer, which is not part of Lewis in any meaningful sense or any sense at all. And I'm now walking down a cycle path into town. I've had to stop to pee. That's how long I've been going. I feel like Scott of the Antarctic, because that is about the temperature currently. I thought to myself, pull over, jacket, you'll be fine. It's bonfire night, it's going to be warm. I'm dreading doing this walk in reverse. The sun is almost set already, but it will be pitch black in an hour. I've just passed the police cordon into town, which is kind of a thrilling experience. It's amazingly locked down. It would be a good place to set a horror movie. You've got this, you know, ancient tradition going on, and no one can get in or out of the town. Loads of people in there, out in fancy dress, just zips past a skeleton wearing a bowler hat. And there was someone who I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt and say has come as Captain Mannering and is not actually a serving British Army officer with their child, who is in full camo. But it's mainly the society dress that you're seeing as we get into town after this exhaustingly long walk, after which I'll have a quick sit down and then probably have to turn around again. The 2020 Lewis Bonfire Night celebrations had, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, been cancelled, meaning that the return of festivities in 2021 was anticipated with an extra year of harnessed enthusiasm and pressure. By November 2021, there had been fairly limited progress in ending the COVID-19 crisis, but it was clearly felt that the people of Lewis could not, or would not, stand for another year's delay. The easing of national restrictions on public gatherings had granted them the go-ahead, and it was clear that they would be making up for lost time. Mick Symes is a local legend, the vice chairman, captain of ranks, and press officer for the Lewis Bonfire Society. Later that night, I would witness an effigy of his head being burnt for some reason. But for now, here he is, explaining what happens on the streets of Lewis.
Since 1922, when a war memorial was dedicated in Lewis, our night has involved walking down to the war memorial, and we do that at slow march, no torches lit. Chopin's March Funerale is played. So we do that, we then light our torches, walk back, and we then follow on with a series of processions. The main one is a procession from the very top of the town to the very bottom, towing our tableau, and that's with our bands, with our best in societies who come along to help us. It's a huge procession, all in torchlit. And then after that, we take the same procession up to our fire site, where we will firstly have speeches from our clergy that liven the place up. We then go on to letting off set pieces. Our tableau, which will be a topical tableau. I haven't got a clue what it's going to be this year. I'm just wondering if any society has changed their mind on their tab in the last couple of weeks. But we then set our tableau off, and then we follow that on with a massive great firework display. After that, we march back into the town again, and our final procession is simply along the high street, round the war memorial, back to the place right in the middle of the high street of Lewis, outside the law courts and the White Hart Hotel, which is where, until 1906, our bonfire used to be.
As a stranger heading alone into town, it was hard to know where to go. I didn't see any great plumes of smoke rising from particular streets or cannon fire crashing out of open windows. But as I approached the bottom of School Hill, I noticed the assembled crowd looking up the road. And within seconds of arriving there, the incandescent tips of flaming crosses emerged over the crest of that hill. It was a sight like nothing I've seen before in my life. This quaint, middle-class Sussex town and a sea of fire and pageantry. My incredulity at this was to be matched throughout the evening. From sombre tributes to the war dead, to whole families parading in Star Wars costumes. The proceedings had an internal logic, presumably, but felt to me like concoctions of a feral society, cut off from normal civilization. We all understand the idea of a New Year's Eve ball drop or a Halloween pumpkin carving. We even understand a fireworks display, but only true Louisians fully grasp their bonfire night. It is an inheritance. Here's Andy Thomas again.
So I think when you grow up in a town where there is this annual kind of bonanza, festival, celebration, commemoration, call it what you will, you can't ignore it. And of course, every November the 5th, all normality stopped. And when you're young, this is very fascinating. And I just grew up accepting that every town must do this every year. You get all these people with flaming torches and then masses of fireworks. And gradually, as I grew up and talked to people from other towns, I realized that actually that wasn't the case. Yes, it happened to a degree in some places, but not like it did in Lewis. So I just grew up with this around me, and I always loved it. It always fascinated me. When you grow up in Lewis, it's a part of you, and you are a part of it, and I don't think you ever really lose that.
This episode is brought to you by the local children who seize upon the month or so that supermarkets sell fireworks in order to make the area I live in feel like Stalingrad in 1942. Oh, and these products. Every year, as smoke blackens the Sussex skies, journalists, like myself, I guess, line up to report on Lewis. There's always an angle. For myself, if I'd been a newspaper hack, I'd have made more of the society processors dressed as Native Americans, a sight that would have been offensive a decade ago, but now feels like a real throwback. But perhaps the thing that gets the most attention, year on year, are the effigies. Pope Paul V, the 17th century leader of the Roman Church, gets burnt every year thanks to his rumoured contemporary support for the gunpowder plotters. But really, it's the modern political leaders who are the true marmalade droppers. In 2001, the Louisians burned Osama bin Laden, just 2 months after 9/11. In 2015, they burned David Cameron alongside a pig, just shortly after salacious allegations involving a porcine cadaver and the Prime Minister's genitals had been made. In 2021, coronavirus was very much on the agenda. Dominic Cummings, the controversial Downing Street advisor, met the flames, along with former Health Secretary Matt Hancock. It is a strange collision of liberal thought and fierce British traditionalism. For many years, Lewis was a Liberal Democrat outpost in real Tory country, and in 2016, a majority of locals voted to remain in the EU. It is possibly the only time you'd see articles in the Daily Mail defending either the destruction of pictorial representations of historic figures or combustible hatred of right-wing politicians.
I think it enjoys its freedom to make these comments. I have in front of me, hanging on my wall, a lithograph, well, it's a print of a lithograph, of the 1853 procession. At the back, it had Support the Crescent. One of the tableaus was a large bear, which was to symbolise the Russian bear. Support the Crescent was to symbolise supporting the Turkish nation in the Battle of Crimea. We featured Putin and Russia again in 2014, when the KLM aircraft was shot down. I would be highly surprised if Putin does not appear somewhere in Lewis again this year. But the thing about the tableaus is they can reflect anything. It can be a very local thing, it can be a regional thing, a national thing, or an international thing. And one of the joys of Lewis was that traditionally it had two newspapers published here. So it was incredibly well up to date with all the news that was going on. And they've been allowed to express themselves, and they enjoy doing so.
The sounds, sights and smells of bonfire night in Lewis are relentless. The parades go on and on into the night, fueled by alcohol that I was not drinking. Every moment your heart rate reduces to a normal level. Another cannon shot is fired a few metres away and you're bowels drop a few inches. There is something intoxicating and overwhelming about the whole thing.
The health and safety aspect of it, the continued attempts, the police tried originally to stop all bonfire. That was 120 odd years ago. They wanted it stopped. It's always been a case of the authorities and principally the police, because everyone else follows them, of trying to cut us down. They were the ones that making sure the trains didn't stop at the station to let people come off. Will we be able to carry on? We look at it as though we will carry on forever and ever and ever. That's what we want to do. But we do have to be realistic and say that at times it looks like more and more is being put in our way to do it. Lewis Bonfire, looking back on the people who set it up, they were all about promoting the town. And these days, I sometimes get the impression that we have people who don't want to promote the town anymore. We have to look at a town that needs to survive 365 days of the year. And if Lewis Bonfire is something that not only generates a little bit of money on the night, but mainly will generate interest in the town and get people to come here, that's great.
I don't doubt that in some form, these celebrations will last through the years. Disneyfied, perhaps. Health and safety-fied, maybe. But it feels like there is something irrepressible about Lewis and its bonfire societies.
Yeah, I think growing up in Lewis, and you've got, you know, figures like Thomas Paine, who was this great political agitator in the 1700s and early 1800s. You know, you've got figures like that all around you. You've got bonfire night. You've got people with loud opinions in Lewis. Yeah, of course, it absolutely affects you. And it did me. And I mean, I write about folklore and mysteries and conspiracy theories because I was always fascinated by the gunpowder plot. And that's one of the most famous conspiracies as it ever was, and it really was a conspiracy. That's why I think the people of Lewis, because they got this kind of side of them that they believe they must stand up for what they believe in, has always clung on to bonfire night. So where in other parts of the country it's faded away, they've gone the opposite way. They've said, no way, we're going to keep doing this. So I think, yeah, absolutely, it is now, by marching on the streets, by keeping the old traditions going, it's a form of saying we want a free expression, or at least within certain boundaries. And long may it last.
With the stars now twinkling overhead, my eardrums firmly pulverised, and bonfires lit over the South Downs like Lewis is calling for aid from Gondor, I head back to the car.
I'm walking back now to my car. You might be able to hear it in the background of this, some of the continuing noise from Lewis. I'm miles outside of Lewis now, almost literally, probably about almost 2 miles outside of Lewis. So it's kind of an incredible cacophony. But I had to get back to the car because I parked it fucking far away. And I've got 2 hours of driving back to London and very tired. And I cannot imagine how tired the people in these processions are because they just go and go and go. And the energy is unreal. And the whole town is sort of feeding off it in very different ways. The old people are loving the traditional elements, you know, the last post, Auld Lang Syne, and all this dress up as Vikings, Tudors, and dangerously culturally insensitive Native American costumes. And then the young people, I mean, I've never seen so many teenagers in my life in one place. They're all just like, they find it silly, they find it embarrassing, but, you know, it's an excuse for them to drink in public. Visibly underage children drinking in public, that's always going to find an audience. And so the whole town kind of comes together. It must be people outside the town as well, because this is not that big and there are tens of thousands of people in there currently. But it has this sort of weird sense of uniting a place to an event, even if everyone's there for very different purposes and probably about 5% of people are there as journalists. But it just galvanizes this sense of being in an unusual space, doing something unusual, doing something that has the weight of history, which is always a compelling weight, I find.
Is there such thing as the British exotic? As a Brit, I see so much of British society as the baseline against which to measure the rest of the world. But I don't think this is purely a Little Englander mentality. The export of British culture that began in the days of empire continues to the present moment. As our island nation's economic and military might collapses, our soft power only grows. We are no longer the empire on which the sun never sets, but we are still an empire that can reshape the world to our advantage. Britain has, after all, convinced thousands of teenage girls that Ed Sheeran and Benedict Cumberbatch are attractive. Are they handsome, or are they just British? And so when you occasionally encounter the British exotic, it feels particularly strange. As I stepped into Lewis and saw those burning crosses coming over the ridge of the High Street, it felt like something out of a fever dream. Half magical, half terrifying. Processions of costumed figures bearing burning torches and wheeling cannons, the air thick with smoke and the sound of beating drums, rolling through the town, past Pizza Express and Halifax and Boots. Beyond the slopes of Scotland's Munros, the crags of the Yorkshire Moors, the roiling waters of Snowdonia, this is a wildness of the British imagination. This episode was written and presented by me, Nick Hilton. Sound design was by Ewan Cameron, and the theme music is by George Jennings. Go to podopods.com to find out more about the work we're doing, and remember to subscribe and tweet incessantly about the show.